You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
The UFC Buzz Podcast with Gareth A. Davis. Exclusive to William Hill. Listen online at audioboom.com or subscribe at iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts.
Hello, everyone. A warm welcome along to the latest UFC podcast here from William Hill. Good to have you with us. Dave Kellner here in the studio in the UK ahead of what is going to be an historic night in the sport as the UFC rolls into New York, Madison Square Gardens for UFC 205. And we have BT Sport pundit and Telegraph writer Gareth A. Davis here to give you his verdict on five of the best fights on UFC 205. First of all, a warm welcome to Mr. Gareth A. Davis, who is at the moment in Las Vegas. Good morning to you, Gareth.
Good morning, or good evening to you where you are. It's a great, lovely, sunny day, I hasten to add, just to make you feel good. And, you know, I'm just preparing to head off. I've been here for Manny Pacquiao fighting at the weekend, obviously, the boxer Manny Pacquiao and the politician. Heading off now for a slight change of combat sports to New York this evening for what is, Dave, it's the biggest UFC event in history. There's no question about it. It's the most stacked card. The gate at Madison Square Garden is already set to do what's done. 11 is sold out. It's $11 million that the gate has made, which is, I think, must be close to a record for Madison Square Garden as well. Everything about it screams power, brilliance, names, title fights. And, you know, we're talking about five fights, which are the five main fights, but we could easily have added another five fights to our discussion today, Dave. It's that big a card. It's so historic. The UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, have fought tooth and nail for licensing with the New York State Athletic Commission, and they finally got it, and they are really going to make the most of it.
You mentioned Manny Pacquiao there. We are recording this Tuesday evening here in the UK, Tuesday morning stateside, and I suppose the Americans at the moment swept up by politics. Have you been getting involved, or are you focused entirely on the UFC, Gareth?
The funny thing is, I was in New York when Barack Obama was elected in, because it was the weekend that Joe Calzaghe fought Roy Jones Jr., believe it or not. So I got to witness that and all the celebrations back in 2008, I think it was now. Listen, I have been glued to the debates, the final debates last night, with Donald Trump in Michigan, with Hillary Clinton in Raleigh. And, you know, it's hard not to be involved because everybody's debating it. It's a bit like when we had Brexit in the UK. People really got involved in it. And in this one, it's been a very divisive, as you know, campaign from both sides. And, you know, there's a lot of unpopularity against both people. And it's just fascinating. I will land in New York just as the announcements, the election's being announced, the winner of the election. I'm very tempted. I think I will end up writing something about it because you cannot avoid it when you're here in the States. But a lot of people, this is the first time I've been here where I've been able to talk to people, and a lot of people are saying we want to change here. And I think that means Trump. My view is, you know, I may be wrong when this goes out or when people listen to it. My view that Clinton is going to sneak it. I know we're not doing the odds on that today, Dave, but my view is that Hillary's going to sneak in.
We are doing the odds on the UFC, all the betting available on the William Hill website. And we're going to start with Donald Cerrone versus Kelvin Gastelum. And Cerrone is 4-7 here with William Hill to win this fight. Gastelum in the market at 11-8. This is a fight that is mouth-watering, and it's not much of a surprise to see Donald Cerrone installed as a pretty heavy favourite given how he's performed since stepping up from 155 into the welterweight division. He's won all three of his fights since stepping up in weight, and those knockout wins over Rick Story and Patrick Cote, Gareth, they hold greater significance here as neither had been knocked out by strikes before stepping into the octagon against Cerrone. His other fight in February at this level saw him submit Alex Oliveira in the first round. Cerrone versus Gastelum, the first fight we're going to look at, and Cerrone has really impressed me since moving into the welterweight division, Gareth.
Yeah, he is. Listen, he's an incredible Muay Thai striker, but also has a brilliant ground game. His submission game is brilliant as well, as he proved, as you say, against Oliveira earlier in the year. Cowboy versus Cowboy, of course, that was. The thing is about Cowboy Cerrone, he had a 2014 and 2015 where I think he fought eight or nine times, and he's a very, very active fighter. This is all about... Cerrone's fought some amazing people. The only person he's lost to is Rafael Dos Anjos, who, of course, was beaten by Tony Ferguson last weekend, as I predicted, by the way.
I was going to mention that, Gareth, at some point in the podcast.
I'm delighted for Ferguson. And for me, by the way, he installs himself now, Ferguson, as the guy who must fight Conor McGregor or Eddie Alvarez, whoever wins. When we come to that fight, we can mention that. But for me, Ferguson is now the number one contender for the winner of Conor McGregor and Eddie Alvarez. Eddie Alvarez, obviously, currently the champion in the lightweight division. When Cerrone stepped up to welterweight after defeat by Rafael Dos Anjos, he set himself a bigger challenge. But he's a very tall man. He's a very rangy man. For me, Kelvin Gastelum is a good bet in this fight, Dave. He is a southpaw. If he's on point in this fight, he will beat Cerrone. If he's not on point, he'll get beaten by Cerrone. They are both fine strikers. Gastelum is a southpaw, much more fluid. He's got a great ground game. He was a brilliant wrestler. So it's wrestling versus jiu-jitsu in that sense. But Gastelum, winner of the Ultimate Fighter at middleweight. He beat Uriah Hall, who's still, of course, at middleweight. Kelvin's gone down in weight, of course. But the thing is about him, for me, he's one of the sleepers of the welterweight division. He's still a very young guy. But for me, Kelvin Gastelum is the guy who people will ignore almost until he is very close to being at the level where he is going to challenge for the title. He's beaten Johnny Hendricks in his last time out in the summer. He had a loss to Tyrone Woodley, split decision. Anyone that can go three rounds with Tyrone Woodley is a beast as well. Woodley, of course, the welterweight champion at the moment. We'll talk about him in a minute as well. But for me, I think Gastelum, as I say, on point, he wins this fight and he wins it on points. He even potentially, for me, could finish Donald Cerrone. I see it as that interesting. If he's not on point, though, he loses.
Kelvin Gastelum to win on points is available at 11-4. Here with William Hill. If you like Gastelum by knockout, technical knockout or disqualification, that's 7-1. And Gastelum by decision, as I've mentioned, 11-4. Gastelum by submission is available at 6-1. So would you lean towards Gastelum on points then at 11-4 at those odds?
Yeah, points. I would lean towards him on points, but it would not surprise me. He's got the ability, if he gets into his rhythm, he's got the ability to strike, hurt and submit, or even knock out Donald Cerrone.
Let's have a look at Chris Weidman versus Yoel Romero. This is the middleweight clash. And Chris Weidman is 4-7 to win it. Yoel Romero in the market at 11-8. Weidman is fighting for the first time since losing his belt to Luke Rockhold, who, of course, went on to be beaten by Michael Bisping. He's from New York, so he'll have the crowd in his corner, but he has been sidelined with a neck injury. The loss to Rockhold was his first in his career. He has beaten a number of the biggest names in the sport, Gareth, beaten Anderson Silva and Vitor Belfort, a couple of real notables. Romero, on the other hand, he's served a six-month suspension following a failed drugs test due to a tainted supplement. Prior to that, the 39-year-old Cuban, who is a former Olympic silver medalist as well, had won seven consecutive UFC fights, albeit the latest one was a controversial split decision win over Ronaldo Souza. I suppose we've got a couple of things to consider here, with both having spent time away from the sport. Gareth. Who's going to be primed? And will Weidman be feeling the effects of that loss?
Well, look, I mean, basically, Chris Weidman versus Yoel Romero, it could have been for the UFC middleweight title. It's as simple as that. They are very, very highly ranked. As you say, Weidman, the former champion, he made his name really on beating Anderson Silva twice. I was at both of those events. The second one, of course, was where Anderson Silva broke his leg in a horrific, horrific accident during the fight. There's a question mark over one of those Yoel Romero victories against Tim Kennedy back in 2014. But the thing is about Yoel Romero, if this was a five-round fight, and the reason I mentioned, Dave, if it had been a title fight, this was a five-round fight, I would have gone for Weidman without question, because Yoel Romero tends to gas after two rounds. He's got a very powerful physique. As you mentioned, he was a freestyle wrestler at the Olympics in Sydney in 2000. He's very experienced. He's very calm. He's that typical Cuban. He's a very fluid fighter, but he's a beast in those early 5 to 7 minutes, the first round, the early parts of the second round. But Weidman is such a brick. He's so powerful. He's so strong. He's so solid in everything he does. For me, if Weidman weathers an early storm by Romero, I think he comes out as a points victor. But it wouldn't surprise me if Yoel Romero had his way early on that Weidman could get stopped or hurt by Yoel Romero. But for me, the pick here is Weidman on points. Everything he does is done brilliantly. The Rockhold loss was a blemish. He made a mistake during the fight and Rockhold capitalized. For me, Weidman wins this on points.
15-8 for Chris Weidman to win on points. A whole range of markets up and available on the William Hill website right now. Let's move on to the title fights, Gareth. We'll start with the strawweight title clash between two poles here. Joanna Jędrzejczyk is 1-4 to beat Karolina Kowalczywik, who is in the market at 3-1. Method of result and round betting and fight to go the distance, all on the website. And both fighters undefeated so far. And Jędrzejczyk has been foot perfect in the UFC. She's won all six of her outings. And I just remember the beating, Gareth, she put on Carla Esparza to win the belt back in March 2015. That was absolutely brutal. And it was a statement victory for Jędrzejczyk. And she is heavy favourite here at 1-4, Gareth.
Yeah, you'd expect that with Joanna, Dave. I mean, look, I mean, she, you know, she's been a wrecking ball in the UFC. I spoke to Stipe Miocic, the UFC heavyweight champion, a couple of days ago, and Stipe is going to be at the event with his wife. He's out of action at the moment. He's not going to be, we don't know when he's defending the title next, but he said that Joanna is one of the people he most looks forward to watching. He calls her a beast and an animal, and that is the way that she fights. There's no doubt that Kowalczywik has got a very good victory, coming off a very good victory against the brilliant Rose Namajunas. But, you know, as you say, she's 10-0. She's got it all to play for, the Polish princess, as she's called. But the thing is, Jędrzejczyk transforms into this incredible fighter. She's got brilliant Muay Thai. She's improving all the time. She's training an American top team now. She's based herself in America where she's got amazing sparring. She's mixing her game up more and is only going to get better and better and better. You know, she has literally wiped out in her title defenses. I mean, apart from winning the belt, of course, against, as you say, Carla Esparza in very impressive fashion during that that great period when the women's strawweights came into the UFC just over a year ago, or a year and a half ago. And she battered Jessica Penne, Valerie Letourneau, who really weren't at her level, and then did the Ultimate Fighter series where she was around Claudia Gadelha for 8 weeks while they were filming that. And she struggled with that a little bit because she likes to transform in fight week. But when it came to the fight, I was at the event, of course, she absolutely owned Gadelha over the five rounds in a brilliant fight. For me, it's another brutal fight, this, but Kowalczywik will not stand up to the continuous assaults of Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And I see her exacting a stoppage, Dave, around the third or fourth round.
Joanna Jędrzejczyk to stop her in round three, 10-1 here with William Hill. Jędrzejczyk in round four is available at 14-1. So a couple of big prices on those rounds there, Gareth. What impresses me most about Jędrzejczyk is that jab. It just unsettles an opponent. She uses it so frequently early on in her fights. And that's something that she can build on as a fight progresses, Gareth.
She does. Like you say, she uses it at her foundation, but then she's got tremendous footwork and she is so adept at working fighters back onto the octagon wall and then, you know, using her skills and her combinations to trap them. And I tell you what, she has absolute killer instinct and she doesn't let up. You know, the thing is about her, she's got such brilliant cardio. She's so on point with all her training processes. And she's a lovely woman, by the way, outside the octagon. I haven't said that. She's a great role model for this sport. She must be close in the pound for pound lists at the moment. She's done so much for women's MMA. But when it comes to fight time, she's one of those people that is technical and precise and brutal. And she's got the whole package, if you like. But yeah, I do fancy her to stop Kowalkiewicz in this fight. Mm.
Yeah, I do as well. Jędrzejczyk to win in rounds three, 10-1. Round four is available at 14-1. Worth noting as well that these two have faced each other before, haven't they, Gareth? That was in an amateur fight back in 2012, and Jędrzejczyk won by submission. Does that play any part in this, or is this a completely separate entity?
Well, you know, listen, I mean, Kowalkiewicz is a Krav Maga and Muay Thai practitioner. Listen, they're mixed martial artists, so they're working on rounding their game all the time. Joanna Jędrzejczyk loves to stand up as well. If this fight ends in a submission, I'd be very surprised. Mm. I mean, it could end in a submission in terms of strike, stun, and submit strategy, but I don't see this going to the ground very much. I see this as a kickboxing Muay Thai striking match. But fascinating, of course, that she did submit the Polish princess way back when, you know. But a lot's passed under the bridge since then. Of course, it was a rear naked choke that she beat her on in Poland. I don't see it, Dave. I mean, I don't know what the odds are on a submission in this fight, but they must be huge.
Yes, it is. Jędrzejczyk by submission is 10-1, so that's a massive price. And Kowalkiewicz by submission, 12-1. So big prices on the submission in that fight, Gareth.
And we'll probably be proved wrong now, and, you know, it will be a submission. It's mixed martial arts. In mixed martial arts, Dave, A beats B, B beats C, C beats A by a different method. It's the nature of the sport. That's why a protected record, even though these ladies are unbeaten, and it's great kudos when you're selling these fighters, an unbeaten record is not a prerequisite to be a great champion in mixed martial arts, because there are so many ways to win and there are so many ways to lose. And someone will always have the keys to victory. That's why the long champion stretches of George St. Pierre in history, of Anderson Silva in history, of John Jones in history in the light heavyweight division. That's why these guys become legends in the sport, because that longevity naturally gives them a legendary status, because it's such a difficult thing to do at the top of the food chain.
On to Stephen Thompson versus Tyrone Woodley. This is for the welterweight title. And it's scheduled to start at around about 4:30 a.m. in the UK. Stephen Thompson 1-2 to win the bout. Tyrone Woodley is 8-5, and the man known as Wonderboy, Stephen Thompson, is the favourite to beat the champion, Tyrone Woodley, on Saturday night. Thompson's usually so understated when it comes to pre-fight promotion, Gareth, but he's been embroiled in a war of words with Woodley in the lead up to the fight. He's a traditional martial arts protege who's risen through the welterweight ranks quite quietly, but he has called Woodley out for this battle, and I think that's annoyed the defending champion, Gareth.
Yeah, I do. I think it's annoyed Woodley because Thompson said he's going to Muhammad Ali him. Yeah, and I think it feels a bit of an insult, I think, to Tyron, because he, like you say, he's come up as well through the ranks, by the way, and fought his way. He should have fought for the title long ago. Of course, he knocked out Robbie Lawler to take the crown just a few months ago. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, though, as you say, he's a traditional karate fighter and has a fascinating style, kickboxer karate style. He's a fascinating guy because for many years he was a sparring partner for champions like Chris Weidman. He's very, very elusive. He's Anderson Silva-like. He's... What I love about Stephen Thompson, I interviewed him recently, he had to do it earlier because even after his last fight, he had to run off and give... He was fighting Rory McDonald, a tremendous fight where McDonald couldn't close the distance against him, and McDonald's a beast over five rounds. Stephen Thompson had to go off and teach his children's karate class. He loves teaching kids karate. He's very much a mixed martial artist, but I like the fact that he's trying to get into Tyron Woodley's head for this fight. I think what he wants is Tyron Woodley to bull rush him because he's going to be elusive then and throw counter kicks and counter strikes. I actually go against the form in this fight. I think Tyron Woodley, it's such a weird matchup of styles.
Yes.
Thompson is a dancing, long, dangerous guy who creates a smoke screen in front of him, has beautiful movement, and has incredible knockout power with both feet, okay? And the feet knock people out like nothing else in mixed martial arts. I mean, the striking range and the power that he can apply against Woodley, the shorter man, make their great dangers for Woodley as he approaches and closes the distance with Thompson. But for me, Dave, I actually think that Tyron Woodley is in his purple patch right now. I think he's going to shock us all, and I think he's going to get to Stephen Thompson, and I think he might even take him to the ground. You see, it's hard to get hands on Thompson, but I've got a feeling when we saw the decent movement from Tyron Woodley under Duke Rufus in his last fight when he knocked out Robbie Lawler, I think we saw vast improvements there. And unless Thompson dances for two or three rounds and then frustrates Woodley and draws him in and gets him with a head kick and knocks him out, that's possible. But really deep down, I think at some point, Tyron Woodley's gonna land some serious metal, some serious iron on Thompson. I may be completely wrong here, but I think, you know, if you look at his losses, they've really been in decisions. He had a bad loss a few years ago to Nate Marquardt. He was knocked out with elbows and punches, so he can be knocked out. But this is a fascinating fight. It's so hard to pick, but I'm going to go Woodley. My head says Woodley, but my heart says Thompson. I would love Wonderboy Thompson to win this.
Tyron Woodley, by the way, by submission, 11-1. You talked about it being a kind of a weird matchup, and Woodley is a former Division One wrestler in Missouri, so you'd think that Woodley is going to try and grapple with Thompson if he can get hold of him and take him to the ground.
Exactly, if he can get hands on him, if he can get Thompson to the ground, posture up, get above him, and use the Coleman hammer technique and ground and pound Stephen Thompson. I don't think he'll go for a straight submission. Woodley's a power guy. The other thing is, in this fight, Woodley will want to get the job done early. You know, he's a very hench, very powerful, huge legs, massive upper body, real strength. He'll want to get the job done. He'll want to get to Thompson inside three rounds, as far as I'm concerned. He doesn't want to let Thompson dictate the fight and the rhythm and the movement and the generalship, as Thompson did against Rory McDonald. Because what happens with these guys, they tire, they get befuddled. It's what happened to McDonald. And that's why I understand why the bookies, why you've installed Thompson as favourite, because technically the fight suits him. But I, as I say, I've got an instinct with Woodley that this is his time. He may not reign for a long time, but I think this is his time now.
8-5, Tyron Woodley is Gareth's pick for that welterweight title clash. And we finish with the big one, the main event on the card in the lightweight division for the title, Conor McGregor versus Eddie Alvarez. And McGregor is 8-13 here with William Hill to win the fight. Alvarez 13-10. We do have 10 markets on the William Hill website for this clash on Saturday night. And we've got to start by talking about Conor McGregor, first of all, Gareth, because behind that brash exterior, which has made him the highest profile performer in UFC history, he's a man that wants to dominate, a man that has mastered his craft, Gareth, and he's determined to etch his name into the sports record books. And this, Gareth, is his latest step.
Yeah, as he says, you can't hold Conor McGregor back. You know, he's arrived in New York. He arrived in this beautiful Rolls Royce, and as he says, I'm running New York. You know, he loves to put himself out there as a gangster king, as a mafia chief. You know, it's part of his persona. It's part of his warrior persona. He's got to own everything. He has that attitude. Has this incredible confidence. But if you look behind the scenes, Dave, it's all born out of the preparation he puts in. I've been watching reruns of his second fight with Nate Diaz in the summer. It was a brilliant performance. I watched it again last night. It was an absolutely brilliant performance because he had the same issues in the second and third rounds that he'd had in the first fight that he lost to Nate Diaz. Yet this time, he weathered it and he came back. He's got this propensity to learn and come back stronger. What he did to come back against a guy who'd beaten him straight away and defeat him speaks volumes for what Conor McGregor knows and does. And rather like Tony Ferguson last weekend in Brazil, mental confidence, mental toughness, self-belief that cannot be shaken is what counts so much at the level that he's at. For me, Conor McGregor, as Duke Rufus said, I spoke to him last week, he said, you know, he hits like a truck with that left hand. Conor's taller than Eddie Alvarez. He's, again, like Wonderboy Thompson against Tyron Woodley. Conor's in and out and movement, or he'll stand in the pocket. He's got those versatile angles that he creates all the time. Eddie Alvarez is a fine brawler and boxer and striker. Conor McGregor will have the advantages early on in creating the angles for me. Alvarez has the advantages later in the fight. For me, Conor's got to try and get the job done earlier, because the longer the fight goes, for me, the more it suits Alvarez, because he seems to get a second wind in fights, as he did in his fight against Anthony Pettis. Of course, he lost that contest, but he won that contest. But the thing is about Anthony Pettis. He is a fine striker and very versatile like Conor McGregor, but Alvarez managed to wind to kind of get stronger and stronger as the fight went on. Very, very interesting. Again, it's a fascinating fight. There's so much on the line for Conor McGregor in this fight, really.
You mentioned those two fights against Nate Diaz, or the second fight that you'd been re-watching. It is well worth noting, for those that don't know, those fights took place at the 170-pound weight class, whereas Conor McGregor's dropping to 155 for the first time in the UFC, but he has done it earlier on in his career. This is a weight in which he'll be much more comfortable, isn't it, Gareth?
Yeah, definitely. Look, he was the Cage Warriors... you know, it's a great promotion, you know, that's based in Europe. He was the featherweight and lightweight champion. I think welterweight was a step too far. He was carrying a little man on his back at welterweight for me. And you could really tell that, he looked fine physically, but he was too bulked up in my view. You know, he may go back there again when there's the right fights for him. But lightweight, you know, as he says, when he was at welterweight, it was steak for breakfast, steak for lunch, steak for dinner. Now he probably has one steak a day and, you know, lighter meals, but he'll be comfortable at 155. I think when you look at the 155 division, it's a brilliant, you could literally, Dave, line up fights for Conor McGregor for the next 3 years with the guys in the division. I mean, the lightweight division is probably the most shark-infested division. It's a minefield for the fighters, you know, I mean... Tony Ferguson, the number one challenger, rightly there now, by the way. He must get that title shot, Dave. for me. Khabib Nurmagomedov at 2, Rafael Dos Anjos at 3, then Nate Diaz, Edson Barboza, Michael Johnson, Michael Chiesa, Beneil Dariush, Donald Cerrone. There are so many challenges for him in that division. It's the right division to be in. And I'd love to see him in the next, 15, 18 months, fight Ferguson, fight Nurmagomedov, fight Dos Anjos, even fight Nate Diaz again, for goodness sake. The second fight was brilliant. But there are so many great fights for him at lightweight. He will feel good there. And, I know you're going to ask me for my pick. I think he does it. And I think he gets to Alvarez. I think there'll be a few kittens for McGregor along the way. He always creates incredible exhilaration and excitement. There's dangerous moments for him in this fight for me, but he'll come through it and he'll win. I think he'll win on points in the end, but he might have to scrape through against Alvarez. I don't think he's going to stop him.
McGregor on points is 5-1. Big price here with William Hill. McGregor to win on points. If it does go the distance, is endurance going to be an issue for Conor McGregor? Because it has been against Nate Diaz at a different weight, admittedly.
Yeah. I don't think it will be. I think, that McGregor, in his mind, will say that he's going to finish Eddie Alvarez. And by the way, that wouldn't surprise me either. He breaks fighters to the body. Let me take another pick with that as well. McGregor on points ought to win by breaking up Alvarez's body by about the third round. Mm. He slices like a butcher's cleaver with that left foot of his. He hits places in the organs, in the body. That's so brilliant. He's so technical. He knows exactly what he's doing with all the parts of his foot. I've heard him describing it before. And when he gets going, Conor McGregor, he is a machine, but in a very fluid martial arts, Bruce Lee-like way. And for all his kind of gobbledygook talk at times and, owning this and owning that, when he fights, he is beautiful to watch. And also fearless. So, by the way, it wouldn't surprise me to see him stop Eddie Alvarez by around about the third round. And it wouldn't surprise me to see him enact that, Dave, by hurting Alvarez to the body to create that finish.
Conor McGregor to win in round 3 is available at 9-1. Gareth, thank you for your company on this podcast. Do make sure you follow Gareth on Twitter at GarethADavisDT. And you can follow myself at D. Kellner. Make sure you check out all William Hill's podcasts at audioboom.com as well by typing in William Hill. Gareth, enjoy New York City, Madison Square Gardens on Saturday night. Should be a special atmosphere for an historic occasion for the UFC. Enjoy it and look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thanks, Dave. I think it's just going to be an amazing week all around. The build-up's going to be fantastic. The fans are going to be crazy in town. I cannot wait to get there. And I can't wait to speak to you and see whether I'm right, wrong, or whether we are on point next week ourselves.
Get a £5 free bet every week with Offer Club from William Hill.
Hey-o, let's go, let's go.
Simply stake a total of £20 or more across the week on pre-match football accumulators with 4 or more selections, and you'll get a £5 free bet on the Friday. Plus, you can get on faster and easier than ever with our new and improved mobile betting experience. Join William Hill Offer Club on mobile or online now. When the fun stops.